Okay, good afternoon, ladies. Ladies, we are beginning today the fourth Sefer of the Torah, Sefer Bamidbar, starting with the first parashah. The name of the parashah happens to be Bamidbar as well. The theme of this parashah, as well as a lot of the book of Bamidbar, is the counting of the Jewish people. In English, we call that a census. The Jewish people were counted actually twice in Sefer Bamidbar, once in our parashah, and later on in Parashat Pinehas. And the Torah tells us that the numbers came out to about 600,000 people. That's where you get the statement where it says there's 600,000 Jews. That was basically the amount of Jews that were counted in the Midbar. And who was in charge of counting these Jewish people? Moshe Rabbeinu. God put him in charge. Actually, Aharon helped him. And also the leaders of the tribes, the governors of each tribe, also were involved in coming to the final tally of how many Jews there were to all the tribes. My question today is a basic question. Many of you remember that even in this country, they do take a census to count the population. I think it's every 10 years. How do they take a census? So if you remember, they have people that go from house to house. They're usually people that cannot find a better job than working for the Census Bureau. And they have a clipboard and they knock on your door. And these are from the lowest level of people, as I said, have nothing better to do. And you don't have to be a graduate of Harvard to be to count. You knock on the door, they ask you questions. How many people? How many males? How many females? Did anybody ever have smallpox or chicken pox? And they ask you different questions, and they write it up, and they go to the next house. And at the end of the day, they deliver all the information to the government. So it's really not a prestigious job to do the census, to be the one that's counting the citizens. So the question that I ask you today is, then why was that job given to Moshe? Moshe is Rabban Shel Kol Yisrael, the chief rabbi of Israel. Adon Kol HaNevi'im, the greatest of all our prophets. And the question then would be, why would they give him that position? It's a menial job. He has to go around counting all the Jewish people. Give it to somebody, give it to one of the kids. Give him a clipboard, go around to every single tent, and give us all the numbers. I think it's beneath his respect that he should be the one that's running the census. And God says, Tifkidu otam, ata ve'aharon. It's a divine command. You get the job done. But I'd like to explain to you it in depth. Again, once in a while we talk some things that are a little higher than the ceiling. But I'm going to try to say it in a simple understanding without getting too lost in the depths of the Torah, to give you an understanding of what's taking place over here. But I ask you again, as I tell you many times, sometimes when you come to a class, well, the reason that you come to a class is to hear new ideas, not to hear the ideas that you're familiar with. So always, whenever there's a new idea that's proposed, the person has a certain resistance, because you never heard it before. So right away you have a guard. Is this true? How come I never heard it before? Well, that's why you come to class, to hear new ideas. And therefore, you have to be a little opened to hear some new concepts that you might not be aware of. But I'm glad if you came to last week's class, we already planted the foundation for this idea that I'm going to say. We know that there's a certain amount of letters in the Sefer Torah. Our tradition tells us that there's 600,000 letters in the Torah. It's really not so. There's more like 350,000 letters in the Torah. I didn't count it before the class, but I remember that it's something in the 300,000s. But the tradition is that the rabbis tell us, Yesh Shishim Ribo Otiyot La Torah. It's actually the abbreviation of the word Yisrael. Yisrael is Yesh Shishim Ribo Otiyot La Torah. The Jewish people are also referred to as Yeshurun. Yeshurun stands for Yesh Shishim Ribo Neshamot. That there's 600,000 souls, and there's 600,000 letters, And as I explained to you last week, every Jewish soul is connected to one of the letters of the Sefer Torah. That means our nourishment, our spiritual fulfillment, is that every Jew is connected to the Holy Sefer Torah. The Torah is the blueprint of creation. God created the world with the words of the Torah. The Torah preceded the creation. As the Zohar HaKadosh says, "Istakel be'oraita ubara alma." God looked at the Torah, and from the Torah He created the world. The Torah is the protoplasm of the creation itself. And therefore, just like in a blueprint, if anybody ever built a home or came across a draft or a blueprint, whatever you're going to see in the house has to be in the blueprint. That means if you're going on the third floor and you see there's a room to the left, you can trace that back on the blueprint. You look for the third floor and you go to the top and you make a left and you see there's going to be a room. If it's in the house, it has to be in the blueprint, because they use the blueprint to build a house. That's obvious what I'm telling you. So when God created the world, there was also a blueprint. God's a builder. So, like it says, God is a boneh, boneh Yerushalayim. He's boneh olam. He created the world. He built the world. So he had a plan in front of him. The plan was the Torah. Again, it's hard for us to understand that. When we look at the Torah, we don't see a blueprint of anything. We see letters. We see pesukim. When they take the Sefer Torah out on Shabbat, you look at the words. You don't see lines. You don't see graphs. You don't see rooms. But we could only see the Torah with our physical eyes. We're not able to see beyond the letters of the Torah. But in the letters of the Torah, there's a blueprint. And God was able to see such a blueprint. And if He created the world from the Torah, I'll give you an example just so you can understand. Some of the greatest rabbis, for example, the great rabbi called Baba Sali, Alav Shalom, the great Kabbalist that lived in the city of Netivot in Eretz Israel. Fortunate is a person that was able to ever visit the Baba Sali. What happened? One time, there was a child in England that was missing. He was kidnapped. The family came to the Baba Sali. Our child is kidnapped, we don't know where he is. The rabbi took out a piece of paper, and he started to draw a picture of a street, with buildings, with houses, with this. So he says, "Does this street look familiar to you?" They said, "Yeah, this looks like a street in our neighborhood in London." So on the corner there's a church, and he drew the picture. He says, "The child is in the basement over there." Sure enough, they went, Scotland Yard, whatever they did, boom, exactly. The rabbi, "How do you know?" He says, "Those that study Torah, so you have the blueprint. So you're able to see the whole world from the Torah." He said, "I was never in London, but I see that street as if I'm there. And therefore I'm able to draw it, and I see where everything is taking place. I just look through the words of the Torah." So even the great Hachamim that are able to study Torah, in the Torah itself, you see things that most people cannot see. We only see letters, but they're able to see the entire creation unraveled, opened up in front of them, fully clear. That's what we mean, Chachmei HaTorah. That's when we talk about the light of Torah. You've heard that statement before, Torah Or. There's a light of the Torah. That light gives the Hakamim a vision that they're able to see, Misof HaOlam Ve'ad Sofo. They're able to see from one corner of the globe to the other. So, if we're in the world, which we are, we're part of the furniture of the world, there's a sun, there's a moon, there's an earth, and there's humans. And in the human race, there's Jews. I'm not prejudiced, Hasb Shalom, but we do believe that we are the chosen people. Maybe I am prejudiced. But the point is, we are chosen. There's nothing to talk about. I didn't make up this decision. God told us, you are special. You are chosen. You have to believe that you're special, that you're different, that we're cut from a different fabric. Baruch Hashem, we're lucky. There's a reason why every single morning, both of us, men and women, make a blessing with the name of God. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam shelo asani goy. Or shelo asani goya. You make this blessing. You have to feel very proud. Asher baharbanu mikol ha'amin. That you chose us amongst all the nations, which means we're favored. We're special, we're different, we're God's child. The Pasuk says, Banim Atem Hashem. Everybody else is my creation, but you're my children. You're the closest to me. Again, it's nothing that we did. We're lucky. Because if you look at our family tree, all of us, every single person in this room, you could trace yourself back to one of the children of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Or to Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Vida. All of us, our great-great-great-great-grandmother, anybody in this room over here, and all of the Jewish people, we share the same great-grandmother. That is Sarah Imenu. And anybody that descended from those great people, God says, I love them, and therefore I love anything that came out of them. So we feel good, we're lucky. So if we're in the world, we have to be somewhere in the Torah as well. Where are we in the Torah? So the rabbis tell us, and here's where you need to use your imagination a little. Every Jew is represented in one of the letters of the Torah. That means, this lady might be the letter Aleph, and there's a Bet, and then there's a Gimel, and she's a Dalid, and she's a Peh, and she's a Chaf. And the rabbis tell us, even when we take out the Sefer Torah, you're supposed to try to find the letter that your name begins with. Eliyahu. So I look for an Aleph. I look for a word in the Sefer Torah that the first letter of the word starts with an Aleph. Last week, the first word in the Parasha Bechukotai was Im Bechukotai Telechu. Im is good. Aleph Mem is Eliyahu Mansur. That's my last name also. That's special, but that doesn't always happen. But any time a person, the ladies from the ladies section, if you have good vision, because sometimes the Sefer doesn't go all the way back, you have to scan the Sefer Torah with your eyes, and you try to find it. If your name is Hana, you look for a Het. Your name is Rivka, you look for a Resh. And so on and so forth. And our rabbi says, because that's where our nourishment comes from, that's where we are. Every letter in the Torah represents another Jew. So there's 600,000 Jewish souls. I know what you're going to ask me, but you mean there's more than 600,000 souls. There's maybe, I don't know, 10 million Jews, or how many, King Yerbu, how many Jews there are. So it doesn't mean that you might not have a full letter. You have a part of a letter. You understand? Which means if I'm writing the letter Aleph, the Aleph is made up of a Vav, or Yud on top, or Yud on the bottom. So it's possible that you're made up of part of a letter, but trust me, part of a letter of a Sefer Torah is very important. Because if a Sefer Torah is missing, even a drop of a letter, the Sefer Torah is Pesula. It happens many times, not many times, it happens sometimes. The opposite, not that often, that when the Baal Koreh, when the reader is reading the Sefer Torah, I see him pause, he stops, and they start to look at the Sefer. And all of a sudden, they call the rabbi up, and they put on their reading glasses, and they start to look, and they investigate. Why? Because sometimes the letter of the Sefer, it's missing a little ink. And now it's a question, is the Sefer Torah Pasul? Even if it's missing a little drop of the letter, the Sefer Torah is no good. What do they usually do in that case? They bring a little child. They bring a little boy from the yeshiva. What letter is this? Because the child, he knows the letter is good. He's in the yeshiva, he knows the letters. We don't want to bring anybody that's corrupted, that wants to make the Sefer Torah kosher, that wants to see something that's not there. We bring an innocent child. What is that letter? He says, Aleph. Oh, you see an Aleph here? Good, sit down. Let's talk about it. We'll continue reading. But if he looks at it and says, no, I don't see it. Good. It's not, I don't know what letter that is. Oh, he can't see it. If a child doesn't know it's an Aleph, Pasul, they bring another Sefer Torah out. So every Jew is a piece of the Sefer Torah itself. Now, as I said, every letter is important. You know, there's a custom that we have when somebody donates a new Sefer Torah to a synagogue. So what they do is they leave the last letters of the Sefer Torah empty. And they invite people. Who do they invite? People that pay for the invitation. That's a funny type of invitation. You have to pay for it. They bid the letters off, and then they invite you to write a letter in the Sefer Torah. It's a very big mitzvah to write a letter in the Sefer Torah. Hachamim say, anybody that writes one letter in the Sefer Torah, it's like they wrote the entire Sefer Torah. Why? Because if that one letter is missing, the Sefer Torah is no good. So by them writing that letter, they're contributing to make the Sefer Torah kasher. Not even if they wrote a letter. If let's say they just wrote even part of the letter, it's like they wrote the whole Sefer Torah. Why? Because with that part missing, the Sefer Torah is invalid. There is a Gemara. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says that the great rabbis of the Talmud, they were called Sofrim. Lefichach nikri'u hachamim Sofrim. What does it mean, Sofrim? Sofrim means a counter. The rabbis were called counters. Why? Shayu Sofrim kol otiyot Torah. Because they used to count all the letters of the Torah. Now, it's hard to understand this Gemara. Is it such a difficult thing to count the letters of the Torah? I mean, I think I could also count. You probably also could count the letters. You sit down if you have nothing to do one day. It's not the most exciting thing, I agree. It's a little monotonous, but you start. Bereshit, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the Gemara says, you know why our rabbis are called Sofrim? Because they count the letters of the Torah. And I wondered, so they count the letters of the Torah, big deal. That's such a great accomplishment. So I saw brought down in the holy books. If I can explain this to you correctly. To us, if I would show you one letter from the Torah, if I show you the letter Bet, what does it mean to you? It doesn't mean too much to me. It's one letter. One letter has no explanation, has no interpretation, it's not written in a sentence, it's no context. To me, one letter doesn't speak to me. What speaks to me is if I see a whole sentence, then I understand exactly all the letters combined, I'm able to make sense of what's being read. So for us, when we read the Chumash, we need to read the Torah in its entirety. We need to read the whole Pasuk, and then we understand it. But for example, the first letter in this week's Parashah, Vaydaber, Vav. If somebody would come and show you a Vav, what do you say? I don't know what it is. It was Vav. Okay, I'll show you another. Vav Yud. So what? What does it mean? Even if I showed you the whole letter, the whole word, Vaydaber. What's Vaydaber? And he spoke. Who spoke? When did he speak? What happened? So for us, we need to see the Torah in its entirety. But the great rabbis of the Talmud, and I'm just saying this over, but I don't understand how they did it. They would be able to look at each letter of the Torah individually, separately, and they were able to bring Divrei Torah from it. Each letter had value to them. I know you ladies don't study Gemara, but many times in the Talmud, the Gemara will say, we learned this halakha from this letter, from the extra vav, or the extra he, or the extra bet. And you say, how did they get a halakha from the letter bet? Which means, when they looked at the letters of the Torah, they saw the depth, what was beneath it. They saw behind the blueprint. They saw behind the curtain, what the letter represents. And therefore, the rabbis were called Sofrim. You know why? Because they counted each letter. Not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They were able to take each letter and give it hadush on it. And give it the rasha on it. They were able to take each individual letter, to count something individually, one at a time. They didn't have to count pisukim or parashiyot. They were able to bring out or express Torah concepts even from one letter. Every letter is valuable, and therefore, you should feel very good about yourselves, ladies. All of you are letters of the Sefer Torah. Every single one of you. We never look at ourselves in that way. We know we're Jewish, we're special, but every single person is a Sefer Torah, you're a walking Sefer Torah, and you're integral. Because if God forbid the nation is missing one Jew, so now the Sefer Torah is missing a letter. That's why the halakha says, this is interesting halakha. God forbid if a Sefer Torah is burnt, lo alechem, the goyim come and they vandalize the synagogue and they burn the Sefer Torah, and somebody witnesses the burning of the Sefer Torah, halakha says they have to rip their clothes. Like there's somebody died, like they're in mourning, they have to rip their clothes. Lo alechem. Halakha says a similar law. If somebody is in the hospital or wherever they may be, and they're by the bedside of somebody that passes away, they were there at the time of the passing, even though that Jew is not related to them. But they happened to be there at the time of the pitira, at the time of the deceased, when the soul went up. Halakha says the person that was there has to rip his clothes. Even though they're not related. And the Gemara's language is, Kesefer Torah shenisraf, like a Sefer Torah that was burnt. That means to us, anytime a Jew passes away, we look at it as if part of the Sefer Torah was taken away. And therefore it's not only a tragedy of the human life, but collectively the whole Jewish people now is in mourning because Because there's a letter is missing from the Torah. And that's why, for example, the other side, when a child is born, why are we so happy that a child is born? When a child is born, we're celebrating another letter of the Sefer Torah. Now that collective Sefer Torah, the 600,000 Neshamot, beautiful. The letter Zayin came into the world. There, the letter Aleph came into the world. Oh, we're missing this letter. And therefore, every time we have a Brit Milah, or every time we have a Sebet for a girl, when a girl is born, you know what it is? It's like Hachnasat Sefer Torah. It's like the party that we make for a Sefer Torah when we donate a new Sefer Torah to the community. There's no happier day than that. Everybody comes out and we're dancing and we're singing and we're rejoicing. Every time another baby is born into the Jewish people, that's another letter of the Sefer Torah that's being born, and therefore we celebrate and we're happy and we rejoice. Good. Including that child also, it's a letter for the Sefer Torah. Rabotai, ladies. The census that was taken in the times of the Midbar, God was not counting people. God told Moshe Rabbeinu, go count their letters. Now, that unemployed census bureau worker, when he goes, he doesn't know when he's taking the count what letter you are. But when Moshe Rabbeinu was able to go count the Jews, he looked at the person and says, oh, I see your holy neshama, your revav, and you're connected to this part of the Torah, and therefore you must elevate yourself in this way, in this tikkun. Moshe Rabbeinu was like a doctor. He was able to penetrate and see the soul of every single Jew, and therefore give him the proper advice and the proper guidance. And therefore we weren't counting people, we were counting letters. And therefore, you can't just have anybody do this. You needed the greatest man that had the X-ray vision of the generation, Moshe Rabban Shalkol Yisrael, to go now connect the 600,000 Jews with all the otiyot. Now that's being said, right after he does the count, listen to what God tells the Moshe Rabbeinu. Now it's time to put them in a position. What does that mean? When the Jewish people traveled in the desert, there was a formation. They traveled in a box, in a square. Listen closely. There was four sides. Three tribes in the front, three tribes in the back, and three tribes on both of the sides. So they traveled in a square. And in the center, that's where the Mishkan was, the tabernacle, and the Kohanim. The Kohanim traveled in the middle. So you picture it in your brain? A square with a central focus point on the Mishkan. But now you understand, why did this law come right after the count? Because now that Moshe Rabbeinu counted all the letters, so now you just have a bunch of letters. Now you have to put the letters where they belong. Just like the Sefer Torah, imagine you have all letters scattered. It doesn't make any sense. So now God, in the infinite wisdom again, knowing the letters of each Jew, tells them, okay, you have to stand here, you have to stand here, you have to stand there. We don't see it. Thus, it looks like a parade. We don't know why this one stands there, that one's there. But in God's perfect symmetry of wisdom, everybody has to stand where they are, because it's actually a moving Sefer Torah now. And listen to the language of the Pasuk. Vaydaber Adonai el Moshe ve'el Aaron lemor, ish al diglo be'otot lebet avotam. The Pasuk says to Moshe, let each family stand in their position of their flag, be'otot. What is an ot? Ot is a letter, according to their letters. I want to ask you a question. How many positions were there? Five positions. Four? And the center. It makes sense why. Because if everybody's a Sefer Torah, how many books do we have in the Torah? Five books. And therefore, since the Jewish nation as a whole is a Sefer Torah, so it makes sense to split them up into five parts. One, two, three, four, and the middle. I want to ask you a question. What's the middle book of our Torah? Vayikra. Bereshit Shemot. Yes? Bamidbar Devarim. Vayikra is right in the middle. What's the parasha Vayikra? In Gemara they call Vayikra Torat Kohanim. Torat Kohanim is all the laws of the Kohanim. And therefore when you're forming the Sefer, who's in the center? The Kohanim. Sefer Vayikra is right in the middle. And all the other Sefarim are on the side. Oh, this is already high understanding of what's taking place on these levels. Can I tell you another secret of the Torah that you have to know as well? The Leviim. The tribe of Levi was counted in a separate census. They were counted separately, which is you counted all the other tribes, and Levi had their own situation. The Levi is a special tribe in the Jewish nation. Moshe Rabbeinu blessed the tribe of Levi before he died. Listen to what he said. Yoru mishpatecha liYisrael. V'toratecha, Yoru mishpatecha liYisrael, v'toratecha liYaakov. You are going to be the teachers of Klal Yisrael. He blessed them. All the halachot, all the laws, all the mishpatim, all Jewish poskim, the ones that say over the laws for the Jewish nation, Moshe Rabbeinu said, they're going to come from the tribe of Levi. Yoru mishpatecha liYaakov, u'mishpatecha liYisrael. This is a side point. And one day, maybe, if you have time, you'll investigate it and see if it's true or not. But I've heard a theory, and it has to be true because the Torah says it. Who comes, which two families come from the tribe of Levi? The Leviim and the Kohanim. Kohen and Levi come from the tribe of Levi. If you look in our holy books, of the authors of the most important books of our religion that discuss halakha, the majority of them are either Kohanim or Leviim. Like the blessing that God, Moshe Rabbeinu, gave the tribe of Levi. From you are going to come the teachers of the Jewish people. For example, we have a Shulchan Aruch. The two most important commentators on the Shulchan Aruch is the Magen Abraham and the Taz. The Magen Abraham and Taz were both Kohanim. The important commentator on the Shulchan Aruch is the Shach, Tziftei Kohen. He was a Kohen. The great Rabbi Hafetz Chaim wrote a big pirush on the Torah. Hafetz Chaim was a Kohen. Now you say, okay, you picked three people, Rabbi, four people. It's not so. Go in the libraries and look at the books of the teachers of Klal Yisrael and the ones that wrote. You'll maybe find 50% of them are either Kohanim and Levim, even though that's the smallest tribe. But the blessing of Moshe Rabbeinu came true, that from Kohanim and Levim, and just even think, the scholars of the generation will come disproportionately from either Mishpahat Levi or Mishpahat Kohen. This is fact. Just think, even if you do probably a survey of the rabbis in our community, you'd probably figure out that the majority, or at least 50% of them, are Kohanim and Leviim. It's a Berachah Moshe Rabbeinu. If he says the teacher's going to come from this tribe, it's going to happen. It's not going to be, you shouldn't be shocked. You shouldn't be shocked. This is the blessing of Moshe. Oh. So listen to what I'm going to tell you. I hope I can explain this to you. I'm trying to tell you the Vrei Torah, ladies, that you cannot hear anywhere else. That you come here, you'll hear something new, and then you could, you like it, you don't like it, but at least you can't say I heard it already. This is, we're trying to say something, Hiddush. It's not my Hiddushim, I'm telling you something from the books. I couldn't dream of any of this. But it says like this. The Levim are the teachers. They teach Torah. The Jewish people are the letters of the Torah, but the Levim are on top. They're the ones that teach the Torah. And they're also letters. Like everybody else, they're represented as a letter in the Torah. How many letters are there in the alphabet, in the Jewish alphabet? 22 letters. 22 letters in the Jewish alphabet, 26 in the English alphabet, but 22 in the Hebrew alphabet. Isn't it an interesting fact? Guess how many Levim there were? 22,000. And our rabbis tell us there's a reason why 22, because the Levim are the teachers of the Jewish people, that therefore they have 22, they're considered the actual letters themselves, the primary letters. In any event, we go a little further. A few weeks ago there was a story in the Torah of a man that came to curse God. And he did it. And at the end of the story, they stoned him to death. He deserved it, and they stoned him. Who was this fellow? The Torah tells us this was a man, his mother was called Shelomit Bat Divri. His mother was Jewish, but his father was an Egyptian. There was one lady in Egypt, she was a little flirtatious. She used to talk to the men, she wasn't so modest, and she got into trouble with an Egyptian man. Only one lady, for 210 years, there was only one incident, which is really amazing. One incident of like impropriety in 210 years. And she had a baby from this Egyptian, and it was this child that eventually came in the Midbar, and he ended up cursing God. Now you have to know, this child is really not considered Jewish, even though his mother was Jewish, because before the Torah was given, Jewishness went after the father. After the Torah was given, it went to the mother. But before the Torah went after the father. So the guy really wasn't Jewish, he was a convert. He converted. So the Torah says, how did he come to curse God? He was looking where he's going to live. So he sees an empty spot in one of the tribes. You know, they were living in this formation. So he pitched his tent, and he's living. All of a sudden, the neighbor comes along and says, what are you doing here? Well, I want to live here. Get out of here. Well, get out of here. What do you want from me? I want to live over here. Get out of here. Take your tent and beat it. Scram. You can't live here. So the guy says, what are you talking about? Why am I worse than anybody else? I'm taking you to Beit Din. They went to court. Moshe Rabbeinu was the rabbi of the court. What's the case? I put my tent over there. They don't accept me. Moshe Rabbeinu says, they're right. They're right. The guy comes out of the court. This is what the Beit Din says. And he cursed God. He was upset at the ruling. Now, from the fact that he cursed God, that shows you he wasn't really a good convert. Because if he was really a Lashem Shamayim convert, you don't come to curse God. The man was Epikoros. The man was a Rasha. But my question always was, what do you care if the guy wants to live next to you? What do you care? The Midbar is not like a street in Brooklyn where it's congested and there's no room and every house is on top of each other. The Midbar is humongous. There's thousands and thousands of acres of land. So what do you care if another guy comes along and pitches his tent? It's not like he's building a 60 by 150 house. He's building a small little tent. What do you want from the guy? Let the guy live there. Why are they getting so angry? But now you want to understand the depth of that story, why they kicked them out? Imagine somebody would go to the Sefer Torah and add an extra letter. Imagine somebody now would come along now and start adding letters to the Torah. I say, what are you doing over here? You're not allowed to add. If you add a letter to the Torah, the Sefer Torah is pasul. When this guy came to move it, everybody was in the proper formation. God set them that you can't put another separation between you. You're ruining the Pesukim. You're ruining the holiness of the formation. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, you don't belong. You got to get out. We have to figure out where to put you. But we cannot put you in the actual formation itself. Our rabbis tell us that what about a convert? Is a convert also a letter in the Torah? What about the Gerim? So the Hakamim tell us the Gerim, they're the crowns of the Torah. You know, sometimes on the letters there's a crown. We talked about the crowns last week. They call them the artistic part of the Torah. They come, they're the crowns of the Torah. That's why Rabbi Akiva was a great rabbi. Rabbi Akiva, his greatness was he used to expound not only on the letters, he expounded on the crowns. You know why? Because Rabbi Akiva came from a family of converts. So he was connected to the crowns of the Torah. So therefore he was able to see not only through the letters themselves, but through the tagim of the Torah itself. But I want to tell you something. And this is, all this is nice, but it's in the air. Now I want to bring it down a little so you can understand something. So to put something in your pocket. So what does it mean to me now? So I'm an Isha, so I'm a letter of the Torah. I'll tell you two things what it means to you. Number one, the respect that you have to have for each other. Till now, when I see my friend, I see another person. So if I'm a good size, I see another Jew. But how much respect do we have for the Sefer Torah? When the Sefer Torah, we hear the Rimonim jingling from down the... Oh, we stand up in Kavod. God bless the ladies. If you ever see when the ladies are greeting the Sefer Torah, the custom of our grandparents was, how do they kiss the Torah? They cover their eyes. They cover their eyes and they kiss the Torah like this. And I once researched, why do they put their hands in front of the Sefer Torah? You know what the custom came from? Because they had such kavod to the Torah. The Torah is like a light. It's like looking at the sun. So they would cover their eyes that they didn't want to become blinded from the holiness of the Sefer Torah. Just like you can't look at the sun, they would go like this, they would just peek through their fingers to look at the Torah a little. What an honor we have for the Sefer Torah. That's the same kavod you have to have for a fellow Jew. Now when I see my friend walking down the street, he's not a simple person. He's not a number. He's a name. He's a ot. Therefore he deserves the proper respect. He's part of the blueprint. Just like I would respect the Sefer, I kiss it, I hug it, I adore it, I dance with it on Simchat Torah, I cherish it, I read from it, I honor it. So the same thing, you have to look at all of your friends like Sefer Torah. The Gemara says, these foolish Babylonians. Why are they foolish? This is the Gemara talking 2,000 years ago. Because when a Sefer Torah walks in the room, everybody stands up. But when a rabbi or an important person would walk in the room, nobody stands up. So the Gemara says, fools, this is an animated Sefer Torah. This is a living Sefer Torah. What are you standing up? The Sefer Torah can't talk, the Sefer Torah can't breathe. This is a human Sefer. For the animated, for the live Sefer, you don't stand up? Fools. What the Gemara was trying to say, that's the respect that every person has to afford to each other. To look at every single person as a human Sefer. But there's another lesson. You have to look at yourselves in that way. Forget about the respect that you're going to get from others. The respect that you have to give yourselves. I'll explain it to you. Anything of importance, anything of value, is usually placed in a modest area. The Sefer Torah, where do we keep it? On the table? No, sir. We put it in the Hechal. We put it behind a curtain. We close the curtain, we close the doors, if we have a lock, we lock it, and really the halakha is, not like it is over here, you're supposed to put a curtain on the outside as well. You're supposed to be two curtains, a curtain on the outside of the Torah, and on the inside. Just like it wasn't the Holy of Holies, there was two curtains, a curtain on the outside and a curtain on the inside. We put the Torah in a very private place, and even when we have it hidden inside the vault, we don't just let it sit there, we put it in a case. And the case is closed, and we put a kerchief under the monim, and we wrap it, because things of value, things of significant, are closed. We don't leave important things revealed. As you know, a person goes to a jewelry store. So, the most important jewelry, of course, you see is behind the showcase, but it's sealed. It's locked. If you want to see something, you have to call the jeweler. Please, could you open this up? He has to go find the key. Precious things are usually behind a fence, behind a guarded area. But I'll give you a secret. Maybe I shouldn't give you the secret. But when you go to a jeweler, you always ask him, what do you have that's not in this showcase over here? So he'll tell you, no, nothing. No, this is it. No. What do you really have? So, come in the back. And then he goes into his vault. And he says, we have a special piece over here, which means a very, very special, special piece. He doesn't even show it, because that's already more precious, more important. This is the self-respect that I'm talking about, that everybody has to have for themselves. If you're a letter in the Sefer Torah, what does that mean? What does that mean, the way you're supposed to carry yourself? What does that mean, where you're supposed to go? A Sefer Torah cannot be in any place. You can't bring a Sefer Torah to certain places. You can't bring a Sefer Torah to a place that's not proper. You have to make sure that it's in the right place, and you have to dress it also with the proper way. Now if you start looking at yourselves like that, I'm a letter in the Torah, therefore I have to... Imagine we brought the Sefer Torah out bare. Just a scroll. You'd say, aye, what are you doing? Cover it up. It's not... We never saw a Sefer like that. Put the case back on. You're also a Sefer Torah. I know you've heard every speech on modesty, and you've heard every example, and I'm giving you a different item. Forget about whatever they said. It's true what they said. And I probably said it as well. But now I'm looking at it from a totally different way. A Sefer Torah needs to be covered. There's no question about it. Not because of this one's looking, this one's... Forget about it with everybody else. Even if you're on an island, and you're in a remote place where you're the only one on the earth, you still have to honor the Sefer Torah in the proper way. Would it be just because you're on a remote place you can take the Sefer Torah and unroll it and leave it on the table? Of course not. It has intrinsic respect. And I'll tell you a story and I'll conclude. There was a great lady called Ruth. We're going to read about her in a few weeks. I've read a story. She was a a convert, a righteous convert. Her name was Ruth. Resh Vav Taf. You know, Resh Vav Taf has all the letters of the same word, Torah. Torah also has Resh Vav Taf. The only letter that's missing is the He. And that's what she was missing also. The five books of Moses. She didn't accept it upon herself. So, before she accepted the five books of Moses, the Hamisha Hamishet Torah, she's called Ruth. Once she accepts upon herself the Torah, the conversion, she herself became an embodiment of Torah, which means now she's in the book. And where did I tell you the converts come from? From the crowns. Now watch what happens. She ends up marrying a fellow called Boaz. She ends up having a child. Make a long story short, her grandson is none other than David HaMelech, King David. Her great-grandson is none other than King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech. Such a lady went from being destitute and poverty-stricken, and she had a very bad mazal at a certain part, and she ended up elevating herself to become the grandmother of the Mashiach. And the story is such a beautiful ending. It says, King Solomon, when he established his throne, the throne of Shlomo HaMelech and his kingdom, he was the king of the entire world. People came from all over the universe to get blessings from Shlomo HaMelech, and he made two thrones. He made one for himself, and it says one for the mother queen. Who is the mother queen? His great-grandmother. Could you imagine King Solomon sat on the throne, and next to him, the mother queen, Ruth. What an honor she received to sit as she was the founder of such a prestigious family. And the question is, how did she become in this position? What, how did she get there? So the Torah tells us the story. She was poor, she was so poor, she didn't have what to eat. So she had to go to the religious farmers. The law is that the religious farmers leave the corners of their fields for the poor people. Leket, Shekha, Pe'ah, and her with all the other people, the Aniim, they go and they bring a basket and you collect whatever you can collect. Now you have to know it's not an easy thing because you're not the only poor person. You know, imagine somebody's giving away free food. Could you imagine the line you're going to have of people that are really poor, people that are not so poor? Everybody wants a free lunch. So now they're all coming over there and first come, first serve. So they're all there and they're all taking. Boaz comes to his field, he owned the field, and all of a sudden he notices Ruth. She catches him. What caught his curiosity? If you think about it, Boaz saw many people. This was a very normal occurrence. He comes to his field, there's men, there's women, they're all collecting whatever they're collecting. I'm sure he paid no attention most of the time. But when he got to the field, he noticed this lady over and he asked about her, who is she? What's this lineage? Who is this person over here? And as a result of it, eventually he asked enough questions, he ended up marrying her. What did he see? Our rabbis tell us, he saw one thing. The way she would collect the wheat, she would collect it in a very modest way. Why? Most of the women were too concerned about getting the goods. So they weren't thinking about modesty. So how would they collect? They would bend. When they would bend over, it's not so modest. It's not a proper way. But again, who's thinking of modesty? We're trying to eat. So Boaz paid no attention. Obviously he sees a girl. She sits down. She kneels. Like she sits on the floor. Everything is He says, "Whoa, what's going on over here? Who's this person?" They tell, "Oh, she's..." It was the modesty of Ruth that dazzled Boaz. He never saw such a thing. He says, from this lady over here can come great, great, great people. What gave Ruth that ability? Once she converted, and now she knew that she has a piece of Torah, she's now part of this holy blueprint. So now you can't bend like everybody else. You can't act like everybody else. You have to carry yourself now in a different way. Before that, she was from them. She was outside. She wasn't in the Torah itself. She wasn't part of the Torah. But now you became Torah. Ruth went from Ruth to Torah. Now already, it's not mechubad. And I always wondered, Imagine Ruth would have bent over like everybody else. Nothing. You wouldn't even know her name. If she would have been like everybody else, Boaz would have said, oh, another run-of-the-mill, like everybody else, not special. And what would have happened? Yeah, she would have maybe married somebody else, but nothing notable. Her greatness came from what? From knowing how important she was. And when somebody recognized how important they, so then you have to carry yourself with dignity. That part of the dignity is the privacy, the modesty. Unfortunately today, and it's not for me, and even modesty has to be taught in a modest way, trust me. And it's not for a man to talk about modesty. You need ladies to teach modesty as well. But even today with the styles where everything is so fitted, where a person can't move without the clothes causing hafas shalom, so a person has to be sensitive. So a person that's not sensitive to this, you're a letter in the Torah. You have to dress according to the proper way, where every position is going to be covered. I've said many times, there's no such thing as almost modest. There's two choices on the modesty chart. Either are modest or you're not modest. You cannot, it's yes or no. You can't be 73% modest. Because the 27% that's not modest is not modest. So you're not modest on that. Everything has to be accounted for. I'm not going to bore you now and drive you crazy with long speeches on modesty. I know this is a subject. I'm just giving you I'm using modesty as an example. Ladies, don't get nervous. That's another class on modesty. I'm giving you an understanding of your value. And look what came out of Ruth. Where did Ruth's neshama come from? The crowns of the Torah. And because she lived up to her reputation, what came from her? Crowns. The crown of David, the crown of King Solomon, and the crown of Mashiach Tzidkenu. And that's her greatness. Before you could become great, you have to know that you're great. Before you do great things in the world, first you have to recognize, I'm Hashuv. I'm in the blueprint. I'm part of this holy scripture. And only then will you receive respect from others. And then already the most important, you'll respect yourselves. That you have to respect yourself. That's called the self-respect. That's the most important respect. How can you demand respect from others if a person doesn't respect themselves? You're a Sefer Torah walking. Be careful where you go. It's worthy to say one ma'aseh. Today's my rabbi's Yotza Nechabaruch Alav Shalom. So we say a story about his rabbi used to tell us always. His rabbi was a Chamizra, the chief rabbi in Porat Yosef. Chamizra used to always carry a sefer in his pocket. Chovot HaLevavot, the duties of the heart. He would carry a small version in his pocket. So one time he was walking, so the Baalei Batim, the businessmen, they're joking with the rabbi. They were walking by a movie theater. So they said, Chacham, come with us into the theater to watch the movie. So he said, it's not respectful for the rabbi. So they said, not respected for the rabbi. Or, that's how you talk about yourself? As if for your... He said, no, I don't mean for me. I mean to the rabbi. The Chavot HaLevavot. It's not respectful for him to go into a movie theater. Me, what am I? I'm nothing but for the Hakam. He used to say that in humility. But the same thing, a person has to know you are a walking Sefer Torah. So therefore, it's not that you have to be careful where you go and where you don't go. Especially in the summer. Where now, imagine in the summer, we take out the Sefer Torah from the Echal and it's bare. We take out a scroll. Somebody says, hey, where's the case? It's hot. Sefer Torah's hot. What do you want from the Sefer Torah? I can't. Azazit, have mercy on the Sefer Torah. We've got to take it off. Let it loosen up a little. When the winter comes, be cold again. We'll put on a fur coat again on the Sefer Torah. What are you worried about? Again, far be it for me to tell you, the men also have this challenge. I tell the men the same thing. You know, men have to wear wool sisit. You know how hard it is to wear wool sisit? In the winter, it's a pleasure. It's another insulation. But soon it's going to become hot outside and muggy. And you have to wear wool sisit and you have to walk in the street. They're definitely uncomfortable. I'm not uncomfortable. But to people, it's uncomfortable. Baruch Hashem, we got used to it. We're happy to do the mitzvot. But the same thing over here, that's the sacrifice. But from that sacrifice comes kings from you. Comes beracha from you. Your children become leaders, your children become successful. It brings, if one act of modesty brought beracha to Ruth, it wasn't one act, it was a lifestyle, but she got caught being modest. And that's what caught Boaz's curiosity, and the rest is history. And therefore, ladies, know your value, know your worth, you're all special, you're all holy, you're all precious, we need all of you. Without one person, the Sefer Torah Chas V'Shalom is pasul, especially in a big group like this. We have Pesukim over here, we have full Parashiyot in the class, so many letters of Torah that are over here, and therefore Bezat Hashem, that's why Moshe had to do the census. It wasn't belittling, it was to his credit, because he was able to see and penetrate the holy souls. Yiratzon should be fulfilled on us, the Pasuk, Banayich limudei Adonai, v'rab shenu banayich.